This is Rakadix After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rakadix After Hours. Pete, what, episode 16?
15.
I was out by one. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you are all keeping safe in the midst of what's officially a pandemic now. We've got a couple of colleagues who are hoping to jet off around the world on extravagant holidays and things, which may end up not happening. So we're going to start off with a little bit of a discussion about what we might do in kind of a lockdown sort of situation, what we might do, twiddle our thumbs. I've got a Digitact that's just, I need to dive in. First, I need to get some good samples for it. But that'd be fun. Just jump right in there, really learn it inside and out. But other than that, I've kind of run out of ideas. Tend to my plants, twiddle my thumbs, watch them grow. That's about all I've got. You guys, we got Sam actually here, one of our colleagues who's jumped in for it for the first time. Welcome.
Why, hello there.
He's replaced Andy because he's abandoned us. Peter, as usual, Cam's just sitting there. He's on his phone at the moment, but he's here with us. Pete, what would your plans be?
Well, apart from I've got a list of chores as long as your arm, I think it's be time to not use the excuse to not produce new music. So normally I find an excuse not to go in the studio, for whatever reason. It's a sort of tend to procrastinate and end up watching YouTube or something like that. And I think it may be a good opportunity to really set my mind to it, sort of dig up lots of the half-finished projects and see if I can polish them off, get them to a decent state, almost to get them to publishing level, possibly.
Yeah, certainly, you said you dug a few out of the archives, some like modular.
Yeah, I've got a number of things which are just sort of modular jams, which are quite interesting. You know, there's a sort of typically they seem to run for about an hour, but you sort of go through them and you find these little patches of 3 minutes of gold. So I'm going to slice them out and compile them into something. Look at some of the more constructed stuff that I've done, and where it's sort of or just there's a lot of project ideas where you've just got a few 16 bars or something and you know there's some magic in there somewhere. It's trying to tease it out into a full track, so a lot of that.
It'll work on your backlog of synth DIY as well. There's a TTSH just begging to be alive.
Yeah, that's another thing that's sort of sitting on the shelf, and I've got a stack of smaller modules and things queued up in front of it, which I really do need to get round and doing.
Do you actually have a queue kind of system? Do you know what should be done first because it's been there for forever?
Well, certain things are more... I'm going to have to prioritise some of them. I need to... Because I'm building a small portable 84x2-row HP rack that I can take out, bring to the modular caf.
Yes, that'll
be
great.
Do some bits and pieces.
Looking forward to that.
So I need to... I mean, that's something else as well. I've got to build that case. I've got all the components, got all the wood ready. I've got the rails and power supplies and everything to go. So now's most probably an appropriate time to start thinking about that. And then, obviously, as you say, the TTSH, which is... I perceive that was going to be sort of a year-long project.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing you want to sort of... You know, you don't want to rush. You want to really go steadily and make sure and be very thorough about pre-testing components before you put them in, because I've been caught out with that before.
So then it'd be a massive pain to go through and figure out what's...
Well, I've had that with modules before, and I've felt bold and confident and slammed all the components in and then realised the thing's not functioning, and then go back and having to sort of pull out all the transistors and retest them all. And
So, I mean, have you got any tips for that kind of thing? Because I'm still a little bit... Well, I've done a lot of Eurorack DIY, but I'm not... What's the word? I don't think I'm quite nerdy enough. So I always, when we're populating resistors, for example, a lot of the time they'll come in little bags labelled or whatever. I'll always test them just to make sure they're the right kind of value. I don't have the facilities to do that with capacitors, transistors. Would you suggest kind of getting one of those little machines that can identify them, test them, just pop them in before you solder them?
Yes, definitely, because they're not that expensive. And the thing is that, you know, there are... I wouldn't say they're necessarily idiot-proof, but you come with three wires with three crocodile clips for the transistor testers, and it doesn't matter which leg you... clip which wire to, and it just figures out what you've got, tells you what the transistor is, tells you its tolerances.
You don't have to sit there going, oh, commander of the British Empire, and then figuring out which leg's which.
You literally clip any crocodile clip to any leg, and then you get a result. Also, they're very handy for matching pairs, which is quite often quite essential.
Can I interject and ask why that's a thing? I know there is a whole match transistor something, but I have no idea what it's for.
I would imagine that they're working in concert together and you need the tolerances to be close or you're going to get some sort of weird imbalance in
what
the way.
What kind of circuits do they live in pairs?
I'm trying to think of the device. Certainly in filters. Quite a lot of... there's quite a lot of... I don't know exactly because I'm not that in, sort of... that au fait with the intricacies of the details of the designs. But quite a few. I mean, an example recently, or not so recently, it was actually last year, but I did two of the DynSync 303 type modules. So I did an oscillator and I did the filter, and they both had matched pairs, I seem to remember. Certainly the I'm sure they both had matched pairs, and quite a few of them. And it was having that test that allowed me to replace those when I sort of... In fact, those were the examples where I just sort of put them together and then, oh dear, they don't actually work or make a sound or anything. So I've got to... I actually wrote to... I can't remember the gentleman's name, but DynSync. And sort of asked for any kind of pointers and didn't really get a lot back. Unfortunately, I could imagine he's most probably thinking, didn't test all the components beforehand.
It's your own fault for not being super nerdy on it.
I mean, that's just a lesson. It's a sort of schoolboy error, really.
I think I've got away quite lucky with not doing anything more than testing resistors. I've only had 1.5 modules out of probably over 30 that haven't worked. One, I think, it was just an envelope generator, which wasn't very expensive, and my I've got a chord organ, which I can't. I think I told you about this. I can't get the radio music firmware on it, but that you suggested just grab another Teensy might be fine.
Yeah, it might be something to do with the Teensy itself not accepting. It's sort of took the first load and doesn't want to, unless there's a process that you have to wipe it first before you reload it. And there's
potentially
there could be something. Have you got all the little utilities that you need for a Teensy?
I've got the one that you just use for loading pre-made hex files and things. I don't have anything further than that because I don't understand it. Either way, I'll figure it out. Do some digging.
Well, I'll have a quick look into it and see if I can come
That'd
up with anything else. But there may be a case that once you've blown the firmware onto it, that it won't accept any others until you sort of you need to flatten it somehow or sort of clean it.
Yeah, potentially the formatting equivalent for whatever.
Yes,
whatever a Teensy is. I might have to join you on that. Go on the thonk train. Get a bunch of kits in and just hide away. Drinking in some lead fumes. Be great.
Don't you have an extractor?
I do, yeah. Yes. With a carbon filter, which I think is fine.
Well, it's going to get the worst of it away from you.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Trying to avoid the visible fumes as well. It grabs those.
If you can smell it, generally you're breathing.
Yeah, that's true. I can always smell it. I have lead poisoning. Anyway, Sam, what would you do in a lockdown?
There's a lot. Well, I mean, I need to get a lot of recording done because I'm in the middle of kind of recording an EP at the moment, so I need to actually get all of that done.
Is that your stuff?
Solo stuff.
Is this one that you've basically recorded everything of in some form before, but you just wanted to get it all properly polished?
Actually get it into some form of, kind of like finished completion state.
Wait, did you say you went to Big Smoke and did the drums for this?
Not yet, but I probably will be. Because obviously they got some just delicious gear there.
Yeah.
Just using some like Neve-Breeze and stuff on that would be absolutely gorgeous.
So for once we're not plugging Burfield Recording Studios, Big Smoke in... They're Wembley, aren't they?
North Wembley.
North Wembley. Mm-hmm. Friends of the podcast, I guess. Mm-hmm. But really cosy little studio, but some choice gear and a great sounding live room as well.
Yeah, really fantastic, especially for drums and stuff like that.
Yeah. Would recommend. It's an old... there's some kind of chimney thing involved. What was it? I remember the old building.
I don't even know, to be honest.
I remember. They told me, but I've totally forgotten. Anyway, check out the website. Would recommend.
Definitely. Definitely kind of get some recording done for stuff like that. So get all the, obviously guitars and vocals done for that. Probably actually hook up some of the rack gear that I've got at the moment, since it is kind of just sitting in a rack unit and not...
Sitting looking pretty.
Exactly.
So you're going to get that ID44 then?
Mm-hmm. Nice, exactly. Because obviously
the preamps. Inserts, of course. They've got inserts on the preamps.
They have.
Forgot about that. Mm-hmm. That'll work out nicely.
Yes, indeed. So obviously you can get everything hooked up like that. Outside of that, then it's probably a lot of kind of just sitting around and waiting, you know, for everything to blow over.
Just wait, go sit in the Winchester and wait for it all to blow over.
Exactly.
Nice one. Hey, remember, reminder, we're in the pub after work. That's what we do on Rack Addicts After Hours. Next section, your notes disappeared, Pete, but you got a little something? I've got a little something if you want to spool something up.
Yeah, I mean, I've felt guilty over the past couple of weeks when people have been suggesting various tracks for the now Rack Addicts.
Oh, yes. If you're on Spotify, I might have to get Tidal and Apple Music in some form just so I can put the playlist together for everyone on other platforms to look at. Rack Addicts After Hours Spotify playlist. It should be by Ben RR Champion. That's me. If you find that one, that's the stuff that we've been talking about over the last few episodes. Take a gander at it. But what are you going to add? I think we get about two tracks each. That tends to be the thing.
Okay, I've just got the one that sort of came to mind for a particular reason, which I allude to in a minute. Basically, it's a track by Ortega. I think that's how you pronounce it. There's quite a lot of debate. I think you're supposed to say it in a Rochdale accent. From
what's that to those who don't know?
I'm great at accents.
Where is
Greater Manchester?
Oh yeah, I'm not going to manage that. Anyway, what's the track we got?
So the track, and again, it's quite a strange pronunciation. I'm just going.
Of them are, aren't they?
And yes, I'm just sort of whipping down to their Discog so I can pronounce it properly, because they're all a bit strange. But basically, the track's called, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Altbuzz.
How do we spell it? That'd probably help us out.
I believe it's A-L-T-B-Z.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, there's an I in it. So A-L-T-I-B-Z.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm wasn't really, it's a bit naive, I wasn't really aware of these two guys initially. And I was just referring a documentary, which was very good, that came out in 2010 on the BBC. And it was featuring Jim Al-Khalili from Surrey University. I don't know if you guys are familiar with
him. Not at all.
He's a gentleman, he's Iraqi extraction. But he's a professor of quantum physics, I'd like to say. And he does quite a few, has done many documentaries. Mm. Normally they're on BBC Two. And they're generally to do with sort of quantum physics and the weirdness of that.
Things that give you space vertigo.
And some of it's sort of historical science. This particular documentary was called The Secret Life of Chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of those documentaries that, when I was watching it, I had a sort of a bit of an epiphany. I don't know if you get that sometimes. You sort of, if you're into documentaries, that you're watching them and suddenly you really get it. I mean, I don't
most
mean
of the time
just...
it's nature documentaries for me, so I don't think it's enough. the right category. So that's how giraffes reproduce. Great. No, it doesn't happen to me.
No, this one was phenomenal because it was basically sort of describing the study of chaos theory, but it went from how it was, you know, the early proponents of it and how it established itself. But as the documentary unwinds, you realise that they're suggesting that chaos in itself is how life actually starts in the universe. And they actually demonstrate it. And some of the very early people that were working, I think people like Alan Turing, who was doing certain mathematical models with random numbers. But in the randomness, you started forming patterns.
Oh, yeah.
Even when you didn't try, they started forming patterns. And he was going round these particular patterns that he had drawn on these sheets of random numbers, and he was sort of showing them, saying, don't they look like the patches on cow skin?
Oh, yeah.
So it was explaining how that sort of thing. And you get into other areas like fractals.
Oh, yeah.
And that type of thing. And then there was a very interesting part. And then they get into the process of feedback. So what they're suggesting within this chaos, you get these events happening, and the events feed back on themselves and produce the event again. And then they sort of have a repetition. And that's the beginning of...
I think I see why there might be that moment where suddenly it all clicks into place. Because at the moment I'm frowning, one eye is closing and I have no idea what's going on. But continue.
Well, we've demonstrated it in two ways. And this is where I sort of hooked onto the Orteco. Because I find with a lot of really high quality documentaries, the soundtracks have been very carefully chosen and really help drive the whole essence of that particular documentary home. And this particular one, they used some various different types of music, ranging from classical all the way through to the particular piece that they used, which was this Orteca track. Mm. And the two things they focus on was a chemical process that was discovered by a Russian or a Soviet scientist, but in the middle of the Cold War. So his experiments didn't actually reach the West. So as what happens with science quite a lot of the time, there may be disparate people working on the same area, but they don't have dialogue because of political reasons or whatever. So I believe the guy was, his second name was Chukov, and it's a chemical reaction whereby you add a cocktail or a mix of chemicals together and they go into a reactive process, but the process oscillates backwards and forwards between two states and continues until the actual substances have completely lost their atomic energy, you know, the various energies that are creating the process. And it was phenomenal, the way they demonstrated. I think it was happening in real time, but they sort of had petri dishes and it sort of looks like a very thin orange liquid, and then they would the orange liquid would start forming these white spots, which actually came out in sort of stripes and sort of radiated on their own automatically through the liquid.
Yeah. Do they sort of fill up as white and then it would just do the same? But
well, no, there's multiple sort of ridges of the sort of, so you've got banded colours actually oscillating out like ripples from a pond.
Mad.
And and then he went on to demonstrate it, and this is exactly where they play the Orteca track. He set up an experiment, which we can all do in some respects. You have a screen with a camera pointing at the screen, you start getting
those infinite tunnel things.
Yeah, you get the feedback. Yeah. And with certain focusing, you can get it to do some very bizarre things. So what they did to show it, were they sort of lit a match. And so the image that's been sort of going down these sort of almost sort of endless tunnels was the actual match and a flame. But by changing the focus on the camera, by just adjusting it slightly, the whole thing just turns into the weirdest...
Oh, yeah.
You know, you just think, what is happening?
Yeah.
And it just looked like some sort of avant-garde kind of art video thing. But this is all happening spontaneously through this feedback effect. Mm. And as I say, that particular moment, and then this particular alt-biz track was used to accompany it, and it just had this very profound effect on me. And I made a point of actually having a copy of that documentary because it was just life-changing. I know that sounds a bit sort of hyperbolic, but it really had a real deep effect on me, especially where, as I say, this deep message, because that's one of those sort of real deep questions. I mean, it's depending on how your view of life, the universe and everything is, but an actual constructive explanation of how life can actually start from nothing, from inert, and move on to being a self-replicating, and where's that initial change, and what conditions, and this particular science shows that these conditions can be just set up by random chemicals.
Yeah, sounds good. So The Secret Life of Chaos,
yes,
if it's still online somewhere, hopefully you can find it. Sounds like a good one.
It certainly is.
Lovely.
I'd recommend
stuff.
It to anyone.
A similar kind of well, it's not even similar in any way, but you mentioned that there was a very carefully chosen soundtrack for this documentary. The bit that I'd actually like to talk about is I found a really cool YouTube channel recently, and the soundtrack definitely seems to me that the person that has written it for the YouTube channel, or where they've sourced it from, the person responsible is a big modular kind of guy, but it suits it perfectly. So the YouTube channel is Journey to the Microcosmos, narrated by Hank Green of the Vlogbrothers and SciShow and SciShow Space and many other amazing places on the internet. This is a lot of really excellent microscopy footage using a bunch of different techniques that they actually explain in the video, because I know nothing about this kind of stuff. But it's really, really accessible to people like me with no idea about microbes and single-celled organisms and tardigrades and all these kind of things. But it's explained really well, but there seems to be a lot more detail for people that are actually kind of in the know as well. But excellent footage of... there's definitely a tardigrade video or seven. I keep forgetting all of the names of these microbes. They're all very strange. But it's all, instead of just pictures, it's all real time. It's all kind of moving. And it's got a lovely synthy sort of ambient background, really gentle voice. He's obviously just sort of in a quiet space. He's turned up the gain on his microphone, just kind of just whispering to you about microbes and things. But it's very relaxing, very educational, and because of the way that you have to set up the samples and use microscopes to actually video these things, a lot of the time it's got some really excellent colours You know when you get those transparent kind of slides where you just see it's kind of black lines on cell walls and the outlines of various objects inside these organisms. Sometimes you get those lovely X-ray kind of looking.
Yeah, because they're invariably these objects are so small and their makeup, they're very translucent. So you get a sort of almost a sort of spectral type of colour sort of around the edges and so forth.
Yeah, and they did explain the different techniques that they used to image these things. And one of them was, I'm not sure if it was called phase difference microscopy or something, I don't really know. But the way when light interacts with these objects and the phase of light when it's behaving as a wave, because it feels like it, when the phase changes, you actually get these aberrations, I guess, which make it look like there's these little glowing gemstones inside whatever creatures they might be looking at. It's really, really pretty. Excellent soundtrack, great narration, and educational, because I know nothing about it, and it's just all really interesting. So Journey to the Microcosmos on YouTube, 10 out of 10 would recommend, especially if you just want to kind of chill out in the bath and just watch something kind of cool and chill out.
So it's kind of awe-inspiring, but unstressful.
Yeah, of course, and it's super, super small. Obviously, this stuff could exist in a drop of water, so it doesn't impact your life in any real way unless it's one of those brain-eating amoebas or something. But it's absolutely fascinating. I love it.
Sort of a hidden micro-universe.
I guess that's why they called it the microcosmos.
And were you saying that the actual soundtracks are quite interesting with it as well?
Yeah, I don't know if it's written for the show or if they've sourced it from somewhere, but a lot of it makes me think it was likely written in some kind of modular environment, be that something like Reactor or a hardware modular or VCV rack or something. But there seems to be a lot of random melodies, a bit of granular stuff in there. It's really great.
So have they filmed the microscopic stuff themselves? Have they got access to the equipment?
I believe it's all original for the channel.
So they've got access to the equipment, or actually own the equipment.
And so it's probably some professionals and stuff doing the actual content.
Do you know what sort of...
Actually, you say professionals. I don't think it is. From one video, they mentioned the guy who does all the actual microscopy in the recording as just some guy in Poland, so obviously friend of the channel. They've kind of connected through the wonderful good pathways of the internet. Most of the samples, they say, are just from ponds and lakes and streams in the locale of this gent in Poland.
Do they suggest the level of magnification they're using?
Oh yeah, everything's got in the top left. It shows the species or whatever of the object that they're showing, and also the magnification level. Which again, it's like crediting sources properly, which they do very thoroughly in SciShow and things like Pindex. But it's all there. Even there was one video I saw, the top comment that they'd pinned, one of theirs saying, correction, this particular clip was actually 400 times, not 40. So they obviously care about the kind of the accuracy and the precision of their scientific data on it.
I can't imagine it's 40, because that microscope I use for electronics is something like 7 to 40 times. That's the range, and that's for stuff that isn't, well, I wouldn't describe it as microscopic. It's tiny, but it's not microscopic in the same sense.
It's still actually visible to the human
eye. Yeah, you can see it, but you need to see it clearly.
Well, what was interesting about some of these is, again, I can't remember what the name of the microbe was. It was super strange. But it was a single-celled organism that's as big as a grain of rice. It's this kind of thing. So they're talking about lots of really interesting bits and pieces. So you could see this single cell with the naked eye.
Just about,
how good your eyes are, yeah. You can do it.
I'm definitely going to have to check it out.
It's amazing. I love it. I literally found it 2 days ago, and I've just been binging. It's amazing.
Okay, so I've got one that you may be aware of. I don't know, was it something that just dropped into your YouTube stream or suddenly
No idea.
It was just there?
It was just there. It's not recent. Well, kind of recent, but they've been going through some of 2019 at least, from at least halfway through the year. So not massively new, but it's only just... I must have watched one specific video for YouTube to go, aha, you will like this. And now it's in my recommended all the time.
Would you like 1,000 more of these?
Yes, I would.
I mean, the thing is, you only have to watch one of these videos once, and next minute it's going to be reoccurring on a regular basis.
Of course, that's how it happens.
On that note, I'd like to mention something briefly that popped up into my YouTube stream. I just wanted to... I mean, something that's been around, you guys might have seen it already. I had never seen it before, and I thought, where's that come from? And it's totally left field. So have you guys ever come across anything... it basically goes by the name of artistic cycling.
No.
Oh, is this the kind of vaguely acrobatic...
Yes,
I've vaguely seen a few.
I've not heard anything about it.
This one just came into my stream. I thought, what's that? And it happened to this particular girl, lady...
I think I've seen the very thumbnail. It's YouTube up to its weird algorithms again.
Just, why is this here
the
in my stream?
Side.
But basically, she's the twice world champion. It's a thing... It seems to be predominantly in Germany. Mm. And I'd never seen it as a sport, so... For those who've not seen it and you want to go and see it, let me quickly describe what it is. It's basically, it's like gymnastics, as you would imagine it in Olympics, but on a push bike. So they have these specially constructed push bikes. They're very standard.
All fixed gear, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's very standard looking kind of configuration of a push bike, other than the fact there's no mud guards or brakes or anything like that. And it's a fixed gear. But it's a bit more strange than that. The gears are exactly equal. There's no ratio between the gears. They're one to one, but no sprockets. They're belt driven.
Interesting.
I assume that's for safety and other reasons. And also, I would imagine it's a softer acceleration. So the way the sport works, it's very much like gymnastics. You come out on your bicycle and you sort of give the nod to the judges, and there's a panel of judges sort of like there would be with acrobats, and then they hop on the bike and they start going around in circles, and then they get up and they do a handstand on the handlebars
while wheeling around.
Amazing. Vertically, and then they just perform all these kind of acrobatics, and then they start flipping the bike up, so they flip up and go up through the handlebars, which are like racing handlebars upside down. Yeah.
Oh, so interesting. So the kind of the ends of the bars are kind of
pointing towards you.
That is weird.
The other way up and backwards.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, so they do these various handstands. I mean, one of the most impressive, they do a wheelie pedaling backwards.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, no. Wheelies pedaling backwards with one leg. Well, the other leg is stuck out.
Amazing. That's incredible.
And then there's another one where they hop up like a wheelie, but they hop up over the handlebars, and they're literally sitting on where the handlebar pivots between the handlebar and the front wheel, holding the front wheel, and then go backwards.
Okay. I definitely need to click on that thumbnail.
And then do pirouettes on the back wheel.
That's amazing.
And I think it's like gymnastics. They have to do X amount of these various different exercises.
Moves with difficulty ratings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then they're scored. And then going from extreme from that, they have two people on the push bike doing acrobatics.
Mm. What, is it like a tandem, or is it two people on
one normal bike?
What?
And so
sounds intense.
One could be standing on the handlebar bit, upside down, and then one can be on the saddle bit doing a handstand or something.
Who on earth thought, you know what, I can do some strange things on a bike, you can make a sport out of this?
It could be, for all we know, it could be a very old sport that's kind of grown up in sort of Eastern Europe or Germany.
Lurking
in the shadows, and it's sort of getting towards, you know, how long is it before it's in Olympics or something like that?
Yeah. Okay, well, I propose, what did you find on the strange side of YouTube this week? This isn't this week, but did you know there is a hobby horsing competition? I think it's a Scandinavian thing. Hobby horse, you know, the horse head and the stick with the kind of tiny little wheels on the back. And they just kind of go around doing show jumping and dressagey things, but it's just them pretending to be a horse. It's very odd. I wouldn't recommend watching more than 5 minutes. You just kind of stop getting confused and start just keep watching.
The brain cells die.
Who are these people and why are they doing this?
I have no idea. Is there money in it? Surely not.
Some sort of strange fetish,
who knows. It's bizarre. What have you found? Anything weird on the strange side of YouTube, Sam?
Nothing recently, but something I've been watching a lot is kind of just like tarantula keepers.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've definitely said to you before with like YouTube channels like The Dark Den and stuff like that, where people literally just make a living off just keeping loads and loads of tarantulas, have like an entire room just built to kind of showcase all of these different breeds and varieties and different sexes and stuff like that. And it's so interesting purely because there's just so many different types. Obviously, when you think of a tarantula, you just think of a big, black, chunky spider.
Yeah.
But there's just so many different types that obviously require completely different habitats and stuff like that and everything. But yeah.
It's one of the great things about YouTube. You could just be super interested in something that you will never interact with in real life.
Mm, exactly.
It's pretty cool. It's similar to the channel Ants Canada. I don't want to keep ants.
I know that channel. I was just trying to say that. Yeah.
It's one of... I think we were talking about this on the way to work once, Sam. It's just the way he narrates is amazing. Hello, AC family. I'm so excited today to... And then he has a spiel for about 5 minutes where he says absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But is just taking up time by saying things.
So he's trying to game the YouTube algorithm by stretching the videos.
Yes, most likely. Although, to be fair, the videography is pretty cool and I mean, watching ant colonies is pretty damn interesting.
Exactly, especially with how massive some of his colonies actually are.
Yeah, I haven't watched him about a year, but is it?
No, I've definitely seen it, because I was going to suggest that. I got into a bit of a... I don't know, I've found there was a... I don't know where they were actually from, but they were doing these kind of aquariums, but with strange kind of shrimps in there.
Oh, yeah.
And then adding these strange bits of food and then sort of watching how the shrimps demolished it, like a slice of orange and what they did. And
Because I've seen a lot of these thumbnails knocking about and I've just gone, what? Because there's this person that just seems to put strawberries in a fish tank and just, that's the video.
That's the sort of thing. That's definitely the sort of thing. But they have strange arrangements of floating plants and then there's hoops.
Yes,
and things.
I think I've seen this.
I'm definitely thinking of the right thumbnails.
Yeah, that was, that kind of led me into the ant one because I started watching the shrimp one and next minute the ant one was popping up.
Yeah, so I think the other one that's kind of related to both Journey to the Microcosmos and these other ones that we're talking about is Life in Jars. Mm. It's just this dude in, I think, the Netherlands who just goes to a random pond, grabs some water and some mud and maybe a bit of weed, sticks it in a thing, puts it on his window, seals it and just watches how the ecosystem might sustain itself or not and just looks at what kind of little pond bugs and things he's accidentally captured. It's really cool and it's kind of low budget and just nice. It's an honest just person has a hobby and is sharing it with people. I like it.
I tend to find these videos are not too taxing. There's no anxiety. You can just let it wash over you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to concentrate too hard. It's not like it's a sort of how-to or, you know, you're trying to derive any sort of real, unless you suddenly want to start developing these strange kind of habitats yourself.
Exactly. For the most part, it's literally just like, would you like to see this particular animal do this particular thing? So, yeah, okay.
Well, why not? It'd be a fun time. Exactly. Thank you, YouTube, for catering to these strange needs.
And there's the next 10 minutes of my life, just absolute zen.
Yeah.
And this is the whole point. I mean, you tend to be, as you are with lots of social media, and I regard really YouTube as a form of social media, that you get stuck in your bubble because obviously you hone in on certain things you're interested in and the algorithm thinks, if you like this, you'll like this. And then it becomes you're trapped inside. And it's always strange when something really random drops into your feed and, you know, there's no explanation. Obviously, I suppose there's ways of promoting, there must be ways of boosting channels or something.
I'm not sure if there is by users, but maybe YouTube had complaints about people saying, it's really stagnated. I'm pretty sure I remember an era where it was the recommended column on the right was just always the same video. So maybe these ones, you actually see it in the comments, loads of people saying, why is YouTube recommending me this today?
Yes.
Maybe they're doing that just to try and shake up people.
Change it up a bit.
And if they click on it, then their kind of personal targeted advertising-y thingy will get altered and they might discover something new.
It'd be very interesting to see the assumed model that their system is generated by each individual user. If you like, you had your own profile and what they assume about it, because
that's what I kind of guess it is.
I would imagine
totally
that
wrong.
they build within that model. They can actually knowing your various details, they can derive exactly the demographic you sit in, your
quite
age,
possibly.
Your sort of you know, quite a few scary things about you that you
probably.
You know, how do they know that? And it's purely derived through your choices of watching.
So they get so specific. It's like yesterday you fried a single egg on toast for breakfast. They get so specific just because of what you watched one day.
Yeah, we're watching you. You're watching us. And we're watching you. Yeah.
And that's before you even get into all the Google search stuff. It was like,
oh yeah.
Oh, I wondered this. Go, you type in one letter, and the entire question you were just going to search comes up.
Yeah.
Well, it's. I would imagine they're using the same engines. It's the same company at the end of the day. So, and Google are really heavily into artificial intelligence, and they're really heavily into quantum computing now as well. So, God knows what else they're cooking up.
We've absolutely spoken about this before, Pete. But you know, when we've been speaking about something at work, and then suddenly your phone's got targeted ads for it.
Yeah.
I tried to manufacture this with my girlfriend, and we've been kind of steadily doing it for a good while. Every time we're just kind of chilling out and we get bored or something, or I pick up my Bose active noise cancelling wired wireless quiet comfort headphones or whatever they're called, we just kind of say that in a loud voice kind of at our phones. We're doing it on purpose quite often, but it never picks it up in terms of targeted advertising.
Although saying that, when I first got my Bose headphones, on the very same day I immediately got adverts for like Bose versus Apple headphones, which are the better ones? It's like,
how do they know?
I've never had an advert for this before.
Where did you get your headphones from?
I got this from work.
Yeah, that's where mine came from as well.
Okay, so fair enough.
Yeah, so is
so I don't see how the relationship. It's not like you've gone
into reading my emails.
Well, Google Mail. If you use Gmail, they do read your emails.
I didn't get any though. Maybe
because I mean, there's nothing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. So Gmail is essentially a free service, and there's got to be some payback. And the payback is that they're crawling across your emails.
Absolutely.
So if you've got anything that really that you don't think is appropriate for that type of thing, don't use Gmail.
Yeah, I only found out about this recently, and I'm kind of reconsidering my entire life. Anyway.
Well, even though
I might start writing snail mail.
The TVs I bought recently, which you saw one of those in the kitchen and commented about it when you came around.
It's bigger than the kitchen.
Well, it is a quite big TV to have in the kitchen, but I mean, they're really inexpensive to buy now. I mean, we're talking a 4K 43-inch TV, and it was barely over £300 from a leading manufacturer.
Not bad at all.
But there's a side to that because they are now involved in harvesting your data, so that they want to place these devices. So they're in the same game as everyone else, the same game as Google, Microsoft, Facebook. Your metadata is more valuable than selling you the product.
Yeah. So in this case, you reckon instead of any kind of targeted advertising kind of thing, which is a lot more obvious, you reckon they're literally just selling it. Selling what kind of data they can extract? How would
it
benefit a company?
They possibly could be doing that, but they're also trying to sell you things because now, because I've got completely cut the cord with the TV, it exclusively gets all its data via the internet, and so if you use it in that mode, it's constantly trying to sell you videos to watch. You know, watch this, rent this film. Watch this.
Oh, gotcha.
So they're using nudging.
Is it doing it by specific services like Netflix?
Well,
is it YouTube stuff?
Yes, but they've got their own service as well. So the manufacturer's own.
Okay.
And as it's a manufacturer that also manufactures phones.
Oh, is it Samsung?
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
And manufactures quite a lot of other data, and all these devices are harvesting your data. And they're very keen that if you have your Samsung phone and you've got your Samsung television,
you link it all up, don't you?
You link the phone to the TV and they've got you. They're not only, they know what you're looking at when you're at home, they're also tracking you potentially if they're pulling that data across the network.
Tinfoil hats activate. It's everywhere. You can't
escape. So, I mean, the only answer is to sort of get one of these, if you're that paranoid, to get one of these burner phones.
Yeah, I'm not a drug dealer, honest.
Or go without and just send messages by pigeon.
Yeah. I was actually kind of contemplating buying an iPhone 4S the other day, because they're pennies on eBay. You go on something like iFixit, grab a new battery, give it a thorough wipe, if you can, and because I'm interested in trying to evacuate my phone of all distracting social media and things, just install whatever navigation app there is, all the messaging things, call it a day. Might be able to escape social media a little bit.
I do believe, I haven't got all the details, but I'm sure there was a company working on a kind of open source OS for phones that doesn't do all the nasty stuff for people who don't want all that happening.
The annoying thing is, I've looked into this, there's a few phones out that will let you call, text, and that's it. But the annoying thing is, I want email because I'm not distracted by it. It's a communication. I want Facebook Messenger, again, because it's communication. I want WhatsApp. I want texting. I want calling. I want the internet just for Googling, and I want maps. That's it. And there is no phone that has that combination unless I get into kind of somehow loading up some custom ROM on Android or something, which I can't be bothered to get into all the research for, unfortunately. I did once back in school, actually. But
just
a
way to avoid the endless scrolling nightmare that
is most
social media.
I don't have the self-control to avoid it.
Yeah.
I do have Newsfeed Eradicator on Chrome on my laptop, though, which is great. Because that you press home on Facebook and it just has some inspirational quote on it. So that way, I'm still sort of distracted by clicking on the Eurorack Synthesizers Facebook group and scrolling. But that way, I just read my messages, check up on the Modular Cafe Facebook pages and my own Facebook pages, and that's kind of it. But then I've still got it on my phone, which is, yeah.
Yeah.
There is self-control, and I don't have it, sadly.
Well, we're all addicts to these devices now, aren't they?
Mm.
So what can you do?
I think my parents are doing quite well, although my dad does play a lot of like scrabbly, crosswordy games, like a lot. Mm. But he's escaped the social media.
I think most of my family have done the same. I think me and I'd say most of my family now are pretty much haven't got Facebook on our phones.
Mm.
So it just means that obviously we literally pretty much just use it for messaging and calling and stuff like that.
I know you can delete your public profile from Facebook and still use Messenger, but I still need to admin Facebook pages, which is a little bit annoying.
And I generally only use Facebook for commercial or promoting sort of commercial type things. I don't pour in my every move or do any of the checking in or any of that.
I don't understand
it's just, why would you want to do that?
It's weird. I do need to do a bit of a cleanse at some point, just bin the pictures because who cares, and just, you know, clean it out because it's a tool, it's not entertainment. It shouldn't be entertainment. It should be a tool for communication.
Well Stuart Lee, the comedian, describes Facebook as the Stasi for the Angry Birds generation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I miss Angry Birds now. You've reminded me it exists, Pete. How could you do that? Oh man, have we got any other bits? Because you've done a little bit of a music, you caught up from last week because you didn't have any tracks. Samalam, any tracks you've been attacking recently? I think I've actually exhausted all mine since last week. I don't think I've come across anything new.
Well, one of the ones I've been listening to, it's not a new album or anything like that. I think it's been out for about a year or so now. But basically by this artist called Sungazer, which is made up of a YouTuber called Adam Neely, and then another
him, yeah, I know the man.
Mm, the bass player.
The bassy music theory boy.
Mm, and then another YouTuber who is a drummer who I can't remember the name of, but is absolutely fantastic. Basically, they've released a couple of albums under Sungazer, and the track that I probably say to listen to is probably Bird on the Wing.
Lovely stuff. It's going in the lay playlist.
Fantastic. One of the reasons why I recommend it is because it is, one, obviously a fantastic listen. Two, it's got some really interesting things to do with kind of like metric modulation and some polyrhythms and stuff like that. So one of the main actual riffs in the track is basically a 19 against 20 polyrhythm, which is...
I don't know what that means.
It's very intense. It's basically playing 19 notes with one hand and 20 notes with the other hand at the same time.
Oh, so it's like the 7 over 11 polyrhythm thing that people are doing where it's incredibly confusing.
Exactly. And basically you just finish those at the same time.
Yeah.
But yes, it's absolutely amazing, even though it is insane music metric modulation theory and stuff
it's
like that.
Still quite listenable.
It's very listenable.
Wow, that is impressive.
So they've actually kind of made it in a way so it's actually, you know, a bit more commercial rather than just being like, oh, here is
but still has that interest.
Exactly, yeah.
That's one thing that's always kind of, I'm not sure if I'm annoyed about it or not, because I've neglected my music theory knowledge. People were going, oh yeah, check out this song in this particular time signature and stuff. And whenever I've ever tried to learn some songs and played them, I just learn how the melody goes. I never try and count stuff, and I think that does limit my understanding a certain amount. You know, I suppose in the more accessible time signatures and things, to a certain point, you can just kind of know it. and don't have to actually do any counting. But something like that, that seems like a lot of effort to actually play it.
Yes, it's pretty awful to try and learn.
Jeez. Yeah, if you haven't seen that, there's a lot of YouTube videos around it. It became a little bit of a music theory meme. People going to a 7-Eleven at 7-Eleven to play the 7-Eleven polyrhythm, which is quite funny. And it doesn't sound good.
It doesn't.
It's pretty unpleasant to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, the drummer for Sungazer actually did a bit of a video on that as well, where he did basically doing 99 against 100, which is even more scary to even think about attempting.
This is a left and a right hand doing 99 and 100. So a quick explanation for the idiots like me. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got something like... Can you think of something similar, kind of, you know, 99 over 100, but something simpler so you can explain it to us? Because I don't really fully understand what it means.
So 3 over 4 is probably one of the most common ones. So basically you'll find it in a lot of music where it's going to be the kind of... like da di, da di, da di, da di, da
oh,
kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, I have heard that in places.
Exactly. So that's kind of the most common one. You find it in a lot of popular music. Mm. Obviously, this is kind of getting into the bit more kind of like jazz musician territory, so where they just write scary music that nobody could ever
scary
learn or would want to learn.
Music for technique and advancement and pain.
Exactly.
Why not?
Yeah, so kind of three against four is the general one you'll kind of hear for that. But obviously, with these guys, because they're fantastic musicians, they've pretty much taken it to
they are all powerful.
Another 10 levels up.
Amazing. Mm. Lovely stuff. Anybody got any more bits to chuck into this week's episode?
I'm all done.
Lovely stuff. Well, thank you for listening once again to Rack Addicts After Hours. We've been Pete, Ben and Sam. We'll see you in the next one. Stay safe.